Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
And if you're just joining in on this hour of the program, we are talking about antidepressants, benzodiazepines, and medications that can be addictive, how to get off the medication. And I'm going to be speaking in this hour with many different people who want to share their stories later on in the program with Marianne Brown, who is a psychotherapist, after this. That's Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Tears for Fears. It's a great tune, kind of happy, talking about something that's not so happy. I have received information from a woman named Jeanette who wanted to share her story of her son, Danny. Danny is how old now, Mary? Jeanette?
He's 39 now. Stacey, but his story started when he was 16, so it's been a long journey.
Jeanette, tell us the story about your son Danny, who is 39 years old. What originally happened? Because I do know that it all started while you were visiting here in Spain.
Yes. Well, it actually started before then, but we didn't know what was happening. When he was 16. Things started going wrong at school. We took him to the doctors. He was diagnosed as having clinical depression, and he was prescribed Seroxat, which is an SSRI antidepressant, also known as Paxil in the USA. They left him on this for 5 years. Nobody did anything to check up really how he was getting on. He said it wasn't helping him, but his behaviour became increasingly bizarre, and we wondered what on earth was going wrong. We didn't know. We didn't understand the effect that this drug could have on a person's behaviour. He tried getting different jobs. He couldn't settle. He couldn't concentrate. Anyway, out of the blue, my husband had been made redundant, but he got an offer of a job in Spain, the south of Spain, in Marbella, and we all loved Spain, and we thought this was terrific. It was a fresh start, and he accepted the job, and off we went. But within three weeks of arriving there, Danny had to be hospitalised. He lost the thread with reality. We just couldn't understand what he was talking about. He couldn't understand what was happening to him. And I took him to various doctors, got moved from one doctor to another. We had to speak to 11 doctors before he was admitted to hospital in Malaga.
Yeah. Jeanette, I don't mean to interrupt this story. It's very important, but I'm not hearing you so well. I hear an echo in the background. Is there anything playing that you could possibly turn off?
Now, if I turned off the listen live radio?
That would help.
Right. Okay. Where are we?
We were talking about that you had seen already 11 doctors and you had taken him to the hospital in Malaga.
Yes, but every doctor was absolutely shocked when I told them he'd been in Ciroxat for 5 years. I just wondered, now, what do they know that our doctors at home don't know? Because nobody at home was terribly surprised that he'd been all this time on Ciroxat. What I know now, but I didn't know then, is that Ciroxat in particular is not recommended for younger people, adolescents or young adults, because of the effect it can have on the brain. And also, now let me see, yeah, the drug companies withheld information from our regulatory bodies here in this country, you know, so the doctors here didn't know, but Ciroxat had shown very bad effects on younger people, but the data was concealed, or withheld, I should say.
So what sort of symptoms was Danny having at this time?
He was, this is with the wisdom of hindsight, mania. Mania is awful to live with. He was overspending, but I'm talking about hundreds at a time. The overdressing, overdrinking, overeating, everything was just over the top. Way beyond anything that he'd ever been doing before. It was, his behaviour was, you know, he was an easy child, an easy teenager, and this was just, we blamed ourselves. We thought, this is bad parenting. We couldn't understand. Mania is awful. It
yes.
really is awful. It's very hard to live with. Anyway, when my husband got offered this job in Spain, we thought, right, we'll try a fresh start. But as I say, he ended up in hospital within a few weeks. And that was the start of a long, long journey. He said 5 or 6 years in psychiatric units and 7 years in residential units, and he's had his life ruined.
How is Danny now?
He is an awful lot better. He now is, let me see, a year ago, he moved into a flat right next door to us, and he has lots of support during the day and at night. And just to be back in his own hometown, in his own familiar environment, has, I think, brought about a huge emotional healing in him. But I know there is drug damage there, and whether he'll ever get over that, we won't know until somebody's brave enough to say, right, you must come off these drugs.
So he's still taking them?
Yes, yes, yes. He is not antidepressants, but other antipsychotic drugs. And I think the psychiatrists feel that, you know, if they say, right, we'll do this or we'll do that or reduce them, that they'd be admitting they made a mistake in the first place.
And how are you coping? Are you involved with groups and getting, because this can have a toll on you as well.
Yes, yes, it's taken its toll over the years, but you get used to it, you get inured to anything, and I've joined a lot of online groups, and I find that's a huge release to me, to find other people out there who are in exactly the same situation. I've met some amazing parents by going to conferences, by meeting up with people that are, you know, that I've been in contact with online, and that has been, I don't know how I could have survived without their friendship, their knowledge and their support. It's very important to have a wee network.
Well, Jeanette, it's horrible to hear that this has happened to Danny. I am pleased that he is feeling a little bit better these days, and now on his in his own apartment, and that you have the support that you need. I do thank you for sharing your story with us. It's very important. I'm going to continue on with the many other calls that I must make during the program. But once again, thank you for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you, Stacey, for what you're doing and for listening to Danny's tale. Okay.
Give all my best to Danny, and a hug to yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
Talk Radio Europe.
See his kit, bill, gloves, boots, spanking new leather jacket.
Bet that cost a small fortune.
Jacket's full of holes, though. Calls it airflow technology for those long summer rides.
Loads of permeable protection.
Right, all he needs now is a bike.
Protecting your motorcycle gear is easy with our helmet and leathers cover. Should they get damaged, Linea Directa will reimburse you for the cost of their repair or replacement. For bike insurance that won't be beaten on price, call Linea Directa on 902-123-616. That's 902-123-616. Best price, better cover. Terms and conditions apply.
Talk Radio Europe.
TRE.
Spotlight. With Stacey Pinkerton.
And I'm trying to get another guest on the line, meanwhile that I do. I'd like to find out how you tend to manage your stress.
I'm Audrey, Head of Reward, Engagement and Policy at Imperial. The way I manage my stress is reading, walking, listening to all genres of music.
So my name's Tom Welton, and what I do to relieve stress is stop working.
My name's Debbie Evanson, and I like to avoid stress by spending time with friends, having a chat, cooking a meal together, and just generally being sociable.
My two main techniques to try to avoid the stress are to spend time with the people I love.
To relieve stress, I do two things. Firstly, I make a list. If it's on a list, it's under control. The other thing I do is look after my garden.
I like to meditate to manage my stress. It helps me slow things down, even when I have to juggle a lot at once, and tackle things one by one so that nothing gets too overwhelming.
I combat stress by practicing yoga or going for a walk in the park.
Spending time at the gym, sweating and jumping, so I can only focus on that and forget about everything else.
I like to keep order in my day, go home in the evening by way of the gym, relax and forget about here.
And very much making time for myself. I think that's really important, which includes de-stressing and spoiling myself with way too much shopping.
So when I'm stressed, usually I like to take long walks. I like to walk to the furthest tube stations than just South Kensington.
I plan my week to make sure I always have some downtime. This is a couple of hours to watch TV or do some laundry or just catch up on some life admin. It allows me to step away from my projects and spend some time looking after myself.
And that was how some people tend to manage their stress. My next, I don't want to call them patient, person who has gone through an experience taking antidepressants and had a story to tell, inform us how it has affected their life is Nora. Good evening, Nora. Can you hear me? Nora cannot hear me, obviously. Nora, can you hear me now? Let me try to call back Nora. I'm having problems with the phone lines. I've been trying to...
Hello, Stacey.
Now you can hear me.
Ah, okay. Sorry, something was wrong with the phone.
No problem. I was just trying to introduce you that you have had problems originally starting with work stress. And tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, so my story, I'm an expat working in Ireland. I'm originally from Germany. And I was working in a big company in Ireland, and as with big companies, that can be sometimes stressful. So I was stressed, and I went to the company doctor, and she, within a 5-minute consultation, prescribed me an antidepressant that I didn't even think about what this drug was so much. I should have probably done more research about it. I knew that benzodiazepines were addictive, but I hadn't heard about this drug that she gave me, which was the antidepressant, and she didn't tell me anything either about that. So I took this home, I took it to the pharmacy where they dispensed the prescription without a leaflet, I have to say, so I couldn't read the side effects or anything. And I took it home, I took the prescription, and within, let's say, 24 hours of taking it, I started getting really, really awful side effects. A wide range of side effects, such as like sweating like crazy, paranoia, agitation, and bleeding, and many more. So I tried to get a hold of the GP who prescribed the medication, because I was thinking this can't be right. Got a hold of him. After 5 days of taking this, he decided we should stop. And then I stopped taking this, and first, I was fine. I felt like I had a hangover, but I was okay-ish apart from the hangover feeling. But then after, let's say, 36 hours or so, a bit more than a day, I started getting horrible withdrawal symptoms. But really, of a scale, I don't know if anyone has seen Trainspotting, awful sweating, the room moving, urges to commit suicide, paranoia, shaking, involuntary movements. I can't even begin to describe this to anyone. I think you have to have experienced it to know what this is like. And unfortunately, those symptoms didn't go away. So now this is 3 years later, and the first 1.5 years were just an absolute horror trip. After that, it started getting gradually, very, very slowly better. Now I'm back to work. I was off work for 2.5 years, but it's still very hard.
You only took this for 5 days, and you're still experiencing these symptoms.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. It's unbelievable. I never would have thought that something like this is even possible, but apparently it is.
Well, it's amazing to hear this. I'm happy that you're able to share this. You are through any type of special treatment to help you recover, to get off of these medications and stay off? Did you have help?
I think the problem is also that the doctors didn't believe me, so I had no support from doctors during that whole time. They essentially didn't. They didn't always straight out say, we think you're crazy, but they always said, no, the medication can't cause this. This is a functional disorder. This is a neurotic disorder. This is a psychosomatic disorder. So there wasn't really much help. But I have to say as well that after being in all the online groups and everybody with the same problem and searching for help, nobody found any, so I don't think there is actually any treatment out there that can help ease the symptoms other than time and patience, maybe. That is the only thing. And staying away from stresses and alcohol, caffeine, eating a healthy life. But apart from that, I don't think there is really anything anyone can do.
Well, Nora, I appreciate you for sharing your story, and I wish you all the best. It's enlightening to hear these, because this could prevent someone else from making the same mistake of taking medication that's not possibly really necessary. So all the best to you, Nora, and it seems like every day may be getting better.
Yeah, it's getting there very slowly.
All right, have a great evening, and all the best to you.
Thank you so much, Stacey. Bye.
Bye-bye, Nora.
Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton. Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
And we just spoke with Nora and heard her story about taking Medication only for 5 days, how it's still affecting her life. It's horrible to hear these stories, but it's important that we do create an awareness, and you do get the support that you need. I should have on the line with me Anne Kelly, who has a story to tell as well. Hello, are you there, Anne?
Hello there. Hi, Stacey.
Hello, Anne, and thank you very much for sharing your story with us tonight. You have been quite an advocate in working with governments and petitions and all. We're going to get to that, but first tell us a little bit about what happened to you briefly.
Okay, so when I was around 14, there was three or four different things happened, life events, that put me off balance. I had a big operation in my appendix. My dad died. My dog died. I broke up with my first childhood sweetheart. So all of these things, they had quite a big effect on a young girl who's only 14. My teenage years, I noticed I was just a bit off kilter and probably just a little bit anxious, you know. And when the doctor told me that I needed these drugs and that I had a chemical imbalance, I went with it. You know, as you do.
Yeah.
You do. And so I ended up repeatedly trying to come off these drugs. And each time I tried to come off them, you know, it was a white knuckle ride. I was just in a terrible mess. And then, of course, the doctors would medicate the symptoms that they saw. And, you know, this was all put at my feet as being my illness. And again, I believed them. until eventually I got to about 45 and I decided I was going to taper the drug I was on. It was a very strong drug called phenlofaxine. And I tapered it over 2.5 years, thinking that would be very gradual and that I should be safe doing it that way, you know. And I wasn't. And my world fell apart. So much so, I was so bad, I was left dribbling out the side of my mouth. I was mute, rocking back and forward, suicidal, shaking. It was horrifying. It was horrifying for people to watch it as well. They didn't know what they were seeing, you know? But
you sent me a quote saying that you felt like you came out of a Stephen King novel.
Yeah, it really does. But it's not an exaggeration. It's horrifying, it's terrifying, it takes you to within. You feel like you're on the edge all the time and thinking horrible thoughts. Suicidal thoughts was pretty commonplace for me. I was left with no peace inside my body. You know, nothing was working properly. I was affected physically, emotionally, intellectually, financially, spiritually. There was not an area of my life where that was not destroyed. My family and friends, they couldn't believe what they were seeing. And their only conclusion was that this had to be a so-called mental illness. It felt like all the systems in my body were just not working properly together, mm-hmm. in synchronicity or whatever you want to call it. And I just felt like I'd been chemically slaughtered my entire adult life. And I endured it because I had no other option.
And so many people are given these drugs for life events. They have breakups, like you say you did, and deaths in the family. Even some people lose a child. When did the real problems begin? You say yours were when you were 14, and that's when you started your medication.
Well, it would be in my teenage years. It's hard to tell now, you know. It's really hard to tell. But yeah, I believe that everybody has issues and everybody has problems, right? And life is a difficult experience at times, you know. But those aren't problems that can't be overcome. But I think the real problem comes about once there's a chemical inside your body. And I believe that's when the real problems come, you know.
So
and that's what the doctors are responsible for.
You blame the doctors?
I do blame the doctors, yeah. Their first responsibility is supposed to be to the patient, not to the reputation, not to the governing bodies, but to the patients. And it's for them to stand up and say, this isn't okay. Now, at one point, I went to my doctors and I was shaking, couldn't speak. I was totally mute. I had to be taken in the side door. I looked so scary, you know. And my sister was with me and she begged my doctor. She said, what is going on here? my doctor casually said, and I quote this, she said, "This is your sister's underlying depression that we originally medicated her for." Now, my sister had no option but to, well, you know, she didn't know. I mean, she half believed it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until years later, my sister's quite wisened up to all of this now. She knows, she knows it's not, she knows it's the drugs. And every time I'd go to my doctor saying, please give me blood tests, please do this, test this, test this. But there is no test that will show up the damage. And, of course, the doctors use that to their advantage. They make out that because these tests are all coming back normal, therefore the problem must be my problem, a mental illness. And the result of this is that patients are effectively abandoned unless they're happy to grab on to the only life raft that's going to be given to them. And that's the life raft that's marked mental illness.
Okay, and we get the picture. What have you done to improve the situation? You've been writing to the Parliament, I hear.
Yeah, I wrote to the Parliament. I went along to speak with the First Minister. The Minister for Health. And she brought along her senior psychiatric advisor. I read out my transcript, and it was clear that everybody in the room was quite visibly moved by it. And at the end, when I'd finished speaking, the senior psychiatric advisor got up, walked across to me, he took my hand and he clasped it in both of his hands, looked into my eyes and said, "I am so very sorry." This is a real human heartfelt apology. Now, when I wrote my submission into the actual petition and I tried to refer to that apology in my parliamentary submission, it was strongly suggested to me that I leave this information out. I refused to do that. But I was not allowed to formally identify the person who apologised to me. So I think this is all morally wrong on so many levels. It suggests a huge cover-up. Another example is a senior psychologist in Glasgow who was responsible for CBT therapy. He said to me off the record that his toolbox, in inverted commas, would not make any real inroads into my problem. But he could at least be a listening ear. And again, when I brought this comment up at a later stage, it was denied. So there's too much money to be made from the NHS because it buys CBT services. But make no mistake about this, when doctors are confronted with this whole issue, they are deeply uncomfortable. And patients who are suffering are in a place now where they need to find out more and they need to lose the apology from their voices and their body language when they're speaking to a doctor.
Okay, and so people... You have organized a petition. I know that there's a petition going on in Scotland, also another one in Wales. I'm going to speak with Marianne Brown later on in the program a little bit about some of this as well. But tell us, can anyone get involved and sign these petitions, or does it they have to live only?
Absolutely, yes. This petition is open to anyone, anywhere in the world, who wants to contribute and tell their story.
Where do they find this petition?
This petition you can find on the Scottish Parliament website, or if you want to get in touch with Marion or myself, we can send them information. Because there's so many people now being given these drugs that it's become a huge, massive problem that's just about to take society right off a cliff edge, I think. It involves them writing just one email. Shall I give you the email address? Would that be helpful?
You can give the email address.
Okay, the email address is petitions@parliament.scot. And if they put a little reference in the subject bar, and it should say PEO1651, that just makes sure it gets logged with the correct petition.
PEO1651.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, well, and it seems like you are taking something bad into something positive to help other people, which is very admirable.
Thank you. I think it's important for the Scottish Parliament, who are they are listening, even if it is reluctantly listening, but they are trying to figure out whether these drugs are problematic, and the only way they'll ever get to know if they're problematic is if people speak up. And in order to do that, maybe people need to lose a little bit of the shame, because I think we all carry some shame with us, you know? Mm-hmm. Because in some way, there's this little voice in the back of your head that kind of says, you know, you chose to take these drugs. But to be fair, you know, you trust your doctor, and when they tell you that you've got a condition and that you've got low serotonin and a diabetic needs their insulin and stuff like that, then you do it. You take it, you know?
Yes.
But I think people need to ask more questions now, you know?
I agree with you fully. And Kelly, thank you very, very much. Give again once that email so people can contact and get on board.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hey, Anne?
Yeah?
Can you read out that email once more?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Read out, yeah, the email, yes. It's petitions@parliament.scot.
petitions@parliament.scot. Thank you very much, Anne, for your story, and all the best to you in your recovery.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Stacey.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Bye.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all, I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me, don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror, what do you see? See it clearer, or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all, and you're only human after all. Don't put the blame on me, don't put your blame on me. My opinion, don't ask me to lie and beg for forgiveness for making you cry, for making you cry. 'Cause I'm only human after all, I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me, don't put the blame on me. I'm only human after all, I'm only human after all. Don't put the blame on me, don't put the blame on me. I'm only human, I do what I can, I'm just a man, I do what I can. Don't put the blame on me, don't put your blame on me.
And that was Rag and Bone, Human. I'm trying to reach Fiona on the line, but it's not going through. So I'll just continue on. And meanwhile, Rusted Root. Sail, I'm gonna tell you to run. Oh boy,
Nobody see, nobody on. Well, I would like to hold my hand. Happy Bell Crowley. Happy Bell Crowley. I would like to hold my hand. Happy Bell Crowley. Happy Bell Crowley. Send me on my way. Send me on my way. Send me on my way. Send me on my way.
And that's Rusted Root. Send me on my way as what we're doing. We're continuing on with this awareness type fight on mental health issues, antidepressants, benzodiazepines, drugs that are prescribed to us that end up being addicted and are more difficult to taper off. Some of them, obviously, according to David Healy, that we cannot do so. I have on the line with me Andy. Andy has a story of his own. He went to the doctor originally for a sleep problem. Hello, good evening, Andy.
Hi, Stacey.
Briefly tell us your story and what you are going through, because I know that you were taking benzodiazepines and a few other medications.
Yes, I'll try and be as concise as I can. It's a hugely, hugely complex story. So in 2002, I was prescribed Zopiclone, which is not a true benzodiazepine. However, it's close enough that it falls within the family. That was at a consistent 15 milligrams. It didn't work, and I was prescribed a dose of diazepam concurrently with the Zopiclone. The diazepam then increased over the years. So at its peak, I believe I was on a daily dose of 60 milligrams. The two benzodiazepines lasted around about 10 years. At that point, I felt I didn't need them anymore. My sleeping was okay, and I wanted to stop taking them. I had no idea about the consequences. I was so naive, and, you know, I considered myself to be fairly streetwise. I just had no idea, and I started to taper myself, but I was doing it too fast. I know that now. I didn't at the time, and I slowly became unwell over the course of a year. It was very subtle to start with. The symptoms were few and far between, quite bizarre, and I brushed them off. But they snowballed and they increased in severity and intensity. Now, I'd visited my GP, my prescribing doctor, several times over the course of that year, and I was told that there was nothing wrong with me. In May 2012, I believe it was, she found me bedridden in my flat. My parents had called her because they were so alarmed. And, she wanted me to come to the surgery, but I was bedridden. I was in a dreadful state. I haven't got time to explain to people the symptoms that I was enduring, but these medicines assault every system in your body. Neurological, musculoskeletal, gastrointestinal, the lot. And, anyway, with that, She called the mental health, the local mental health team. I was in Bristol, UK at the time, and they whisked me off to hospital, and I was assessed by a duty doctor who suspected I'd been poisoned. Well, I never saw him again. They ignored that suspicion, and I was told I was inventing it all, and it was all in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was subjected, I was hospitalised for a period of 2 years. I was bleeding rectally in that time. Everything was ignored. My cries, my screams. I was pleading with these people that there was something desperately wrong. And my voice meant nothing in there. The arrogance I was subjected to was astonishing. These people think they're gods. And, you know, they forced me. They exacerbated my condition. And this is, Stacey, this is very, very serious. We can't emphasize, you know, it can be fatal and is fatal in a lot of cases. They forced me into an acute withdrawal. But then they further polydrugged me to fit their agenda, their misdiagnosis, depression. And off the top of my head, they had me on increasingly larger doses of antidepressants, but they also added antipsychotics to the mix. They added lithium, and it was non-stop. They wouldn't allow me to go private. I begged my mother to take me out and let's go private, and they denied that. They said, that's not in your best interests. And when they were confronted with the truth 2 years later, they said, ooh, we had no idea you'd been prescribed benzodiazepines for so long. That might explain things. We'll get back to you. Well, I thought that they would then investigate, and they couldn't wait to discharge me. They actually said to me, you're in the wrong place, you're not mentally ill, and we can't investigate anything. And this is how these people are operating. It's been going on for 50 years, and we're learning this through our experiences. It's diabolical, Stacey. I mean, that's just a really short snippet. There's so much more to my story, and not just mine. This is happening to a lot of people.
Hopefully after tonight, it won't happen to as many. We got to keep creating awareness.
We can really hope, but I'm so glad you featured something from Barry Haslam, because I echo everything he says, and this goes right to the top. Successive governments have pandered to the massive influence that the big pharmaceuticals have. The legislators, the MHRA, that license these medicines, they've known for years. I mean, I've been left with a protracted syndrome. I've so many symptoms, and this is the crazy thing, you know. So many symptoms. I'm in and out of hospital.
Yeah, Andy.
And yes,
we've got to wrap this up. I'm sorry that I can't hear more, but we have to get on. I'm really sorry that this is all happening to you, but I'm happy that you are coming to tapering off and realizing what the truth is. And I do thank you.
Well, I had no choice in the tapering, Stacey, because they forced me from a
well. Hopefully, every day is better for you. And thank you for sharing your story, Andy.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Stacey.
Have a great evening, and all the best to you.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
and that's Rasta La Vista. My next guest is very, very important one as well. She's a psychotherapist. She specializes in the human givens approach to help people get on with their lives and without prescribed mood-altering medication. Marianne has worked so hard with a lot of the people that I've spoken with today, especially Eileen, which I didn't get to tell her story, Fiona didn't reach her, and Beverly. They had a piece published in the BMJ, April 2018, titled, Is the BMJ in the Medical Profession That It Represents Really Listening to Patients and the Public? This can all be found online through many sites, also on the BMJ. I'd like to welcome Marianne Brown.
Hello, Stacey, and thank you very much for having me on the program.
It's great work that you're doing. You are helping these people not only to get off the medication, to taper off in the correct way. How should someone start to attempt who is taking antidepressants or benzodiazepines and they decide that they want to get off this medication? What do you recommend?
Well, I'm not really the best person to recommend this. Beverly, who contacted you, would probably be a better person, and in fact the people who've done it for themselves, because people who have never done it, who've never tapered themselves off, have no idea. So I, as a psychotherapist, really have no idea, and nor have the doctors. It's only the people who've done it for themselves, the guinea pigs who've tried it, who've discovered it's extremely difficult. There are some websites that we can recommend. There's one called Surviving Antidepressants, which people find very useful. So all I try to do is try and help people to find the websites and the Facebook groups and so on where they can find support. But this is the big problem. The medical profession doesn't recognize the problem. And so there is no proper, there's no good advice. I mean, there is good advice. Surviving antidepressants is probably one of the best, but it's people have found out for themselves and shared with each other what works, and the most important message is as slow as you possibly can. But as David Healy said, you know, the tablets come in a form that it's very hard to divide them, so to actually come off slowly is very difficult. So that's the quick answer. So yeah, great, extremely difficult, and the medical profession is completely unhelpful. And as a psychotherapist, obviously, you know, my job is to listen to people. So I started listening to people and discovering just what you've been hearing tonight. Incredible problems, absolutely incredible, and the doctors not believing people.
Yeah, it's well, first of all, we've got to raise awareness, petition to the governments, which you have been doing in Scotland, and I believe is so also in Wales?
Yes, yep. Stevie Lewis has got the petition in Wales as well, yep.
Tell us about that.
So what happened was we'd been trying for years, you know, writing to people and not talking to doctors and trying to get people to, you know, trying to get recognition that there is a problem. People will recognize there's a problem with benzodiazepines and opioids, and the you know, the gabapentins and so on, but the GPs especially do not want to recognise the problem with antidepressants. They keep, I think their guidance tells them that antidepressants are safe and effective. So they've been going with this story that antidepressants are safe and effective for so long, and they've got so many people on them, that and a lot of people are having a lot of problems, especially if they try to come off them, and so they just get put back on them again. So it's you know, the problem is growing and growing and growing. So we were getting nowhere, and we had been working with the BMA as well, even the British Medical Association. They have recognised as a problem, and including with antidepressants. But even then, the medical the rest of the medical profession really don't want to know. So it was a year ago we decided to raise a petition, because that's something the public. So it has to be raised by the public. So it can't be doctors or even MPs or MSPs. It's actually people themselves can do this. So we decided, well, this is the way to go. We don't have to ask someone else. You know, we can do this. So that's how we started it. And it was first launched a year ago, and it was launched in May 2017. And it's been, it's came before the petition committee 4 times now. And they've gone away to get some more evidence, and more people are sending in submissions, as Anne gave you the address that people can still send in submissions. And they've been horrified, the petitions and the staff and the petitions committee have been horrified by the stories that are coming in. Every single story, you really wouldn't believe them until you see one after another after another, and you can see the patterns coming through that these people are telling the truth. They're desperate to be heard, absolutely desperate to be heard and to be believed.
Yeah.
And so your program is fantastic as well, because it's helping people to be heard and to be believed.
Having someone believe in you is the first step in any type of recovery through anything, I think. But I was just heart-wrenched at the stories, and I haven't even heard not even a quarter of what you hear every day. And it is amazing what people are... I don't understand how doctors cannot listen to them. And
they want rid of them. They want them out the door. They put them out of their practices to get them rid of them. It's, you know, what's happening to people is just, it's barbaric. You know, a lot of people have been put out of their, the doctors just refuse to see them anymore because they think they're making it up, or they get the label of being a heart sink patient or a difficult, complex patient, and it gets written in their notes. Medically unexplained symptoms thing, and you know, the doctors are actually trained on how to manage your adult patients with medically unexplained physical symptoms.
One of the things that they always ask you is, are you anxious, or do you have anxiety? Most of us do not know exactly what that means, and you may answer it a little bit wrong, and then, as you say, you're labeled.
Yeah, they tried to pin everything on anxiety and depression, and then they can give you more antidepressants. I mean, it's just awful. What we're seeing is just awful. And I don't know. There's a book called Willful Blindness by Margaret Heffernan, and this is what's happening. This is a kind of willful blindness. Nobody wants to see this. It's so awful. You know, like you said, it's a very uncomfortable, I think you said a very bad taste when you were speaking to David Healy. It's so awful. People want to turn away and say, oh, you know, this is too much for me. I can't bear this. And it feels like the whole medical profession is saying, go away. We don't want to know about this.
So what do we need to do? We just need to stand up.
We've got to, if at least they can even recognize a problem, then we can start saying, okay, there is a problem. What needs to be done about it? And the first thing is to not be starting people on these antidepressants every day.
And I suppose for people to question and not take them right away either.
Yes, because we have got a cultural thing that people think they go to the doctor and get an antidepressant. So there's a cultural sort of education as well, which is one of the reasons why we've been going to the press and trying to say to people, you know, maybe they do help some people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people say they save their lives or they help them, but we now know that there's more and more people who are saying, well, yeah, but you can't come off them. And that once you say, okay, you can't come off them, you know, it's recognizing recognizing the limitations of what these pills can and can't do, and the risks. You know, some people can't metabolize them at all, so they're really dangerous for some people. They're toxic, you know, within a few days, like Nora was, you know, within a few days it just damaged her.
Yeah,
so some people can't take them
at all. They're more sensitive. We're running out of time. We only have like about a half a minute left in the program. What can we do right now? Walking, diet? What do you recommend briefly?
Well, for people who haven't started on antidepressants, if the doctor suggests an antidepressant, better to say not today and go away and think about all the, you know, research all the other things you could do instead. And of course, being a human givens therapist, I would say look at the website of the human givens or the innate website. I've given you the addresses. And really look at every other alternative before you start taking toxic.
Marianne, I'm running out of time. I only have 40 seconds left into the program. Welldoing.org is your website. Also, willhall.net is information for withdrawal sites. Thank you, Marianne, for joining me on the program. All these stories, all these people that you're helping as well. Have a great evening, and once again, thank you. I would like to also thank all the people who joined me in the program. That's Aline, Andy, Nora, Barry, Fiona, and Kelly, Jeanette, Claire, Danny, Stevie, David, Healy, Marianne Brown, and you. Thank you for listening. Bob James up next.